again, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. It's September 11, 2012. And thank you for joining me today. I want to remind you, my website is responsibleeatingandliving.com. Responsibleeatingandliving.com. The acronym is REAL. Because what I talk about is real food for real people. That means all of us. And we have lots of wonderful recipes and videos and all kinds of things. And all of my shows are archived up there at responsibleeatingandliving.com. I hope you visit and visit often. We like to see you there. And send me emails, info@realmeals.org. I love to hear from you, and I'm there for it. Questions, comments, anything you need. If I can help, I will. All right, this is too exciting, and I am just going to roll right into it. We're going to be talking about cheese. Say cheese. Vegan cheese. Everybody says when they want to give up dairy that they can't give up cheese. How many times have we heard this? Too many times. Well, here we go. We've got the solution, and it's right here in my hands. I can't wait to talk about it. Artisan vegan cheese from everyday to gourmet. We are going to bring on Miyoko Shinner, who has been a vegetarian for more than 40 years and vegan for more than half of that time. She's the author of The New Now and Zen Epicure and Japanese Cooking, Contemporary and Traditional. Miyoko has been teaching, cooking, and writing about vegan foods for more than 30 years and lives in Northern California with her husband, children, dog, cats, and pet chickens. Welcome to It's All About Food again, Miyoko.
Hi, Karen. It's nice to be on the show again.
Yes, thank you. Well, what I'm looking forward to is just talking to you alone, because the last time the show was a little crowded when we were talking about the vegan mashup. And it was too many great voices all at once. Yeah. Okay, so you know how exciting this is that you've come up with this book. It's like everybody's screaming about it in your world.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. It really is. And, you know, in my kitchen, it continues to be exciting because I'm always working on new recipes for new cheeses.
As you mentioned in the introduction, this is based on lots of things and work that other people have done. And, you know, we're evolving in so many ways as a species, and we're evolving with cheese making, which is something that's gone on for a long time. And why not evolve to using nuts and seeds in order to make cheese instead of animal excretions?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
And so I think, I hope you realize it now and in the future, but I really think this is groundbreaking. I think this is going to be the foundation of a lot of future products. I hope we see them sooner than later, but I think this will really move people forward in making all kinds of wonderful different vegan cheeses.
Well, you know, I certainly hope so, and that was my intent. I mean, you know, I've been asked by people, why don't you just make them and sell them?
Mm-hmm.
But I really want to be able to give people the tools to do it themselves in their own kitchens. And, you know, a lot of people can't even get the commercially available cheeses as they are right now. But one thing I want to point out about the cheeses in my book that are different from, you know, what might be commercially available in vegan cheeses is that my cheeses are all cultured. And you're absolutely right. I took a tip from a lot of different people and lots of different, processes that are already out there. The Raw Foodists completely inspired me with their culturing nut-based cheeses. But then I just took it a few steps further.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just making a basic cashew cheese, like, well, why couldn't I turn this into cheddar or Gruyere or, you know, or if I did this, if I tweaked it this way, I added this or I cooked it or I cultured it longer or to get a dry, hard cheese, you know, what if I air-dried it just like a regular cheese? Because that's what you do with, you know, the harder cheeses, like Parmesans. They're all air-dried for months and months and months.
I really want to think that more people are going to find their kitchens. I know we've gotten so far away from most people making their own food on a regular basis in their kitchen, and there is a certain amount of movement back there with food shows and people wanting to save on the cost of eating out, lots of different reasons, and just wanting to get healthier. So I'm always saying, find your kitchens, folks. But other than making salads and soups, vegan cheese is another level away, and it doesn't look like it's really complicated, but it is a little time-consuming. It does require some organization and a place to store things while you're waiting for them to grow.
Yeah. Well, you know, okay, so in terms of time-consuming, you know, they're absolutely not instant cheeses, although there is a chapter for practically instant ones that you can make. So you just can't wait, you know, things that you can make in a day or in a few minutes. They are available. There's a chapter for that in my book. But there really isn't a lot of hands-on time for any of the cheeses. It's really just a matter of waiting. And mm-hmm. that waiting can be anywhere from 24 hours to several weeks. And the beauty of the cheeses is that they gain their sharpness from the culturing process, just like regular cheeses do. You know, a lot of the commercial cheeses or a lot of the recipes that were available for vegan cheeses before involve getting that tang or the sharpness by adding something like lemon juice or vinegar, and then it really doesn't taste sharp. It just tastes mm-hmm. a little bit tangy. And so, you know, what I really wanted to do was to let nature take its own course. And so that's what you have to do. You know, sometimes, depending on the cheese, you know, you might have to wait a couple of days, or you might have to wait a few weeks, depending on the texture and the flavor and the degree of sharpness you want. And then again, a lot of these cheeses actually taste better after they've been in your refrigerator for several months. It's strange, but they continue to age in your refrigerator. So it's kind of fun, it's exciting, and it is definitely more work than, you know, just going out and getting a package of something. But I think you're right, there is a movement towards getting back into the kitchen. I know that I make so much more myself now than I did. You know, I have three kids, and they're all older now. But when they were little, I mean, I started buying. I remember the day I was shocked. I shocked myself when I went into the store and I bought a jar of marinara. I couldn't believe it because I'd never done that in my life. I'd always made everything from scratch, mm-hmm. you know, bread, vegan mayonnaise, everything.
But you get
and
tired.
I just got tired and worn down, you know, just like making food all the time to feed all these mouths. And and so now they're older and I've got more time. And I'm sort of back in there in the kitchen now. You know, my husband grows vegetables. And so from the harvesting to making our own, you know, my own jams, breads, vegan mayonnaise, you know, even vegan butter now, cheese, everything. There's less packaging. You know, my daughter gets upset about it. It's like, why, you know, why do we have so much garbage? Look mm-hmm. at all this packaging. And every time you go to the store, if you're not buying just, you know, produce from the farmer's market, there's all that packaging to deal with. So,
you know, I like to point out, most people do these things obviously for convenience and they're overwhelmed and they have a lot of work to do.
Right.
But these things that
I
are,
hear you.
These fast foods and these convenient foods, if you really look at what it took to get them to your home, there's nothing fast or convenient about them. There's a big price.
No, it just didn't happen in your home. That's all.
That's right.
Somewhere
else. I mean, there were factories and people and processing and energy and lots of stuff goes into it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I find a calm in my kitchen when I'm doing all this stuff. It's sort of like meditation for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I certainly didn't feel that way when my kids were little. So, you know, I sympathize with the, you know, the millions of women out there, men out there that are trying to raise a family and put
small
a decent
children.
Meal on the table. So,
small children, teenagers, they all take a lot of everything.
Yeah.
Rejuvelac.
Yep.
So, I'm really curious about this. I can't wait. I just got this book, so I haven't made anything in it. But I've tried. I once went to the Ann Wigmore Institute in Puerto Rico, and I spoke on environment and things like that. And I got to taste some of the foods and things they were doing there. And then I came back home, and I thought, I'm going to make Rejuvelac. And I couldn't do it. I failed miserably. So I'm going to follow your instructions and make some with some brown rice, I think. But here's one of the questions I have. So what it says here is you put the grains in a 1-quart glass jar, add water to cover. I can do that. Place a double layer of cheesecloth over the mouth of the jar and secure with a rubber band. I can do that. I sprout stuff all the time. I do the same thing. Let the grains soak for 8 to 12 hours. Great. Drain. And here's the question. add enough water to moisten the grains, but not so much that they were immersed in water. How much is that?
Well, it's really not an exact science. I've actually, you know, just so they look wet. And
so I rinse them and then I drain them and then they look wet, but there's no real water in there?
No, there's water in there. To be quite honest, I've been very sloppy with my Rejuvelac making.
Well, sloppy's good if there's room for sloppiness.
It's turned out anyway.
Okay.
So, I've made it with a little, like a half an inch of water above it, as well as, just barely just surfacing, touching the surface of the grains. And the only difference that I've found is that different grains take longer or shorter.
Mm.
And, I know that there's a commercially available Rejuvelac you can buy in many parts of the country, and I think they use wheat berries. And
right.
I do use that sometimes, but I've done it with brown rice, done it with quinoa. Rye berries apparently work very well. I've never done it with rye berries, but apparently that works really well.
Mm.
So just because I can't seem to get rye berries for some reason, I don't know why.
Okay.
I've been kind of sloppy, and it generally works.
Right.
Honest,
okay. So. I don't know why I had a miserable time. I only tried it once or twice, and I just it's not working, and I gave up. Okay, but I'm going to try again.
The reason I use Rejuvelac as the probiotic in the recipes, and it's not. I actually also use non-dairy yogurt as a thing that gets the culturing going as well, too. So there's some recipes that don't use Rejuvelac at all, if you go through the book.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I use that is because a lot of the raw food cheeses, the nut cheeses, will say to use a powder probiotic. And what I found is that, a lot of the powder probiotics are actually not vegan because they're grown in a dairy base.
Right.
And two, they're really expensive.
Expensive.
They can spend $25 for a tiny little bottle. And I want my book to be accessible to as many people as possible all over the world. And, in many parts of the world, you can't get a bottle of probiotics.
You can buy a probiotic and it can all be dead. That's another problem.
True. That's true. And I've also used probiotic bottles. I've used them before, and sometimes they just don't work.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that, if I have a recipe for Rejuvelac in there, and, you can buy whole grains anywhere in the world. You can get some kind of whole grain, and you can sprout that and turn that into Rejuvelac. So
genius. I just love the concept, and I can't wait to do it because, this whole probiotic thing, it's important to have them. We need probiotics in our gut. The powders are expensive, and I like the idea of making it fresh. It's got to be bitter.
Yes, 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 absolutely. Now, I have to admit, sometimes I need to make a cheese, and I don't have time to make the Rejuvelac.
Mm-hmm.
I cut down to Whole Foods, and I buy a bottle.
But
I usually have some that's homemade sitting around, but, I run out, and stuff like that happens. So.
Right, and then the other thing about making yogurt, I've made soy yogurt before. The last few times I tried it, it didn't work out so well, and now I know that I need to, because it's always so thin. But the cashews you add to the soy milk.
Yeah, there's
that
a couple
helps.
Of ways of doing it. I actually have a video on YouTube. If you go there and Google my name, Miyoko Shinner, homemade yogurt, you can watch a video where I show you how to make it. But, I came up with that little trick of adding the raw cashews to the soy milk to enrich in it. Because I find that the commercial non-dairy yogurts, like the soy yogurts, to be a little bland, and the only reason they're thick is that they thicken them with tapioca and some other stabilizers.
Yep.
So if you want to make a traditional homemade yogurt that's thick by itself, you can do it two ways. You can either boil down the soy milk for about 15 minutes so that it's reduced by about one-third, and then you can make a really nice, rich, creamy soy yogurt that way, or you can just throw in a handful of cashews into a quart of soy milk and puree that, and then use that to make your yogurt.
I can't wait to get started.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, good. Well, I want you to get in your kitchen right now.
Oh,
get
no.
off the phone.
Get off
the radio. Get in your kitchen.
I'm going to go to the store right after this and buy a few things that I need. And I promise I'm going to do those things. Okay. And then not only do you have cheeses in here, and so I found them – the basic routine is pretty similar here with your different recipes. Some of them have some really lovely flavors, and by culture them shorter or longer, you get different flavors. You use some oils to give some of your cheeses a more meltier feeling. You've got hard cheeses and just about anything you'd want to make. The cream cheeses look outstanding. And then,
well, the cream cheese is, you know, I know there's a lot of cream cheeses on the market, mm-hmm. but the one thing I can say about the commercial vegan cheeses is that the first ingredient in most of them is oil.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is sometimes soy protein or soy milk, or, and then it's just, you know, basically it's oil with maybe a little bit of some sort of protein and then stabilizers. And to me, that doesn't seem like a whole food.
Nope.
So I really like to have foods that, you know, I want to be eating mostly whole foods. And I'm not, you know, I'm not as pure as your last guest. you know, I do engage in what Chef AJ calls the evil trinity, salt, sugar, and oil on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I definitely choose what I eat sometimes with my taste buds. But for the most part, you know, 95% of the time, I do like to have a whole foods, plant-based diet, not, you know, eating processed vegan foods. So,
well, I like,
I try to stay away from the, yeah.
I think we really need to go backwards as we're going forwards in time.
Yes.
And backwards in terms of using whole foods, getting all the chemicals out of our foods. You know, I have this crazy chemical engineering background, and yet I hate all of the chemical engineered foods that shouldn't be. And I personally, in most of my foods, I avoid oil and salt, but then I like to have some toppings and things that, and that's where some of the fat and the soy and the salt are, because it's just like a garnish. It's not the whole food is laden with oil and salt, and,
right.
And that's where this cheese
yeah.
is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm with you. I don't cook with a lot of oil and salt either, generally speaking. But you know what I found with my cheeses is I tried to make them as oil-free as possible. But I could not get them to melt unless there was some oil in them. But the first ingredient isn't oil, it's something else, like mm-hmm. the soy yogurt. And then there is a little, you know, there's enough oil in there to get them to melt. But nutritionally, they still stack up much better than their dairy counterparts. Or their, you know, or the stuff you get at the store. But most of the other cheeses, you know, 90% of the cheeses in the book do not use oil at all. Because I've tried to avoid it, and they're based on relatively healthful ingredients.
I think it's wonderful. We in this whole vegan movement, there are so many different voices promoting so many different things, and anyone that chooses to eat vegan, even if it's Coke and potato chips and French fries, shouldn't have to apologize for not wanting to eat animals. That's a beautiful thing, and everybody should be doing it. And for those of us who want to pursue a healthier lifestyle by eliminating all the artificial chemicals and ingredients to improve our health, that's just another great step. But I love the fact that we can have these cheeses, and they're made from wonderful ingredients. This is just a brilliant thing. I can't wait to get started. And then you've got some desserts going on here in the back, tiramisu, which looks fabulous.
Yeah, and that tiramisu recipe uses an egg white made out of flax. It's a flaxseed.
I saw that flaxseed
meringue.
Yeah, and
meringue. It whips up just like egg whites. It's just amazing. Now, you can't bake with it, but mm-hmm. you can fold it into mousses and things and to lighten it up. You know, you can make like a chocolate mousse and make this egg white, this flaxseed egg white thing. And then it's just incredible when you whip it up. It looks just like egg whites. It's got the same texture. Fortunately, you can't bake with it, but it's great for folding into things to lighten it up.
And the amazing thing is flax seeds come with so many good things for you.
Yes, yes.
I don't know why more people aren't jumping on all of this faster. Okay, so you don't have any immediate plans on making any of these cheeses yourself? For sale, for manufacturing?
Oh, you know.
Who knows?
I've been in business before, as you know. But I am entertaining certain certain things, considering going into the restaurant business again.
Here's the thing,
that is something
for you.
I am entertaining.
I mean, I'm sure you thought about all of this, but when you first came on the scene, and I will never forget it, I told you this the last time we spoke, but I remember the restaurant now and then. It was near Japantown, and then there was, right? It was around Japantown, San Francisco, somewhere around there?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely, it was.
And then I was so excited when I was flying on United to have the now and then cookie. The thing is, you were one of like our four persons, I don't want to say forefathers, but the timing, people weren't like ready yet, and now people are really. So it must have been very painful for you in that time. We didn't have the internet, you didn't have all this access to marketing, and now the time is really ripe for vegan cheese by Miyoko.
Yes, yeah. Definitely, you know, when I started, I was always constantly explaining to people why I didn't use dairy or eggs and why I didn't use sugar, because, you know, when I had Now and Zen, we didn't use any kind of sugar either. And I still don't. I typically use, you know, natural sweeteners, I guess, that can be qualified as sugar by a lot of people, but, you know, maple syrup and that sort of thing. So, yeah, the time is right now, and I am ready. I'm ready to take off. So, I'm hoping that this cheese thing goes somewhere. You know, I love to teach. That's one of the things that is most important. That was the one thing about manufacturing that I really didn't like, was it was just sort of unilateral. I'm just distributing food, but there was no.
Yeah, but people really want this. People really want vegan cheese. Now, I just was curious. Yeah. When you're growing things, bacteria, have you ever had any batches go bad, or are there some safety concerns that we need to keep in mind?
Yes, and that is something that's very, very important that I should state, is that this is not an exact science, and different temperatures, how clean the equipment are you're using, the ambient temperature of the room, the humidity, all of that comes into play in how your cheeses perform. And so, if you're working at, 90% humidity in 110 degree middle of summer, your cheeses are going to culture much faster, and they can go bad much faster as well, too. Mm. So, there's things that you have to watch out for. It's not as simple as providing a recipe for, making a pasta sauce or something.
Right.
It's a little more complex.
Yes.
It's an art, and you really have to watch these things. And it would be wonderful if I went into manufacturing. I'd have to figure out some sort of, uniform, temperature that they would all be cultured in. I'd have to have something like a cave or something like that, where, they'd be temperature controlled and all of that, so that you can sort of predict the outcome of the product.
Yes.
But the fact is, I give a range on how long you should culture these cheeses, because it depends. I mean, even in my own kitchen, sometimes the sharp cheddar takes 48 hours and sometimes it takes 96. Before it's ready.
Well, I know somebody's going to do it. I know some people are going to start doing it, and it's just a question of when, and we're all evolving now, and vegan cheeses are there. And so thank you. Thank you for getting the cheese ball rolling. Thank you, Miyoko, for joining me again on It's All About Food, and all the best to you with Artisan Vegan Cheeses. I can't wait to
dig
into it.
Thank you, Karen, for having me.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've heard another episode of It's All About Food. Join me at responsibleeatingandliving.com, and have a very delicious week. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.